Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, very remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 26, 2021. Authorities in Yei County of Central Equatoria State imposed a night curfew.
This night patrol is to increase the level of security. Yeah, one of the alarm was that we experienced the death of one person shot just near Jemten.
And some young South Sudanese men and women ask for leadership opportunities.
For us to feel that we are part of the processes, young people need to be partners in working together with the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Central Equatoria State have issued an order restricting movements at night in Yei County to reduce cases of insecurity in and around the town. Some activists and residents of the town expressed worries about attacks, kidnapping, looting, and targeted killings by armed men over the past few weeks. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
Yei River County Commissioner Agri Cyrus Kanyikwa says his office has recorded several cases of targeted killings, kidnappings, and looting by unknown armed men in Yei Town. Kanyikwa says the county authority has formed a joint team of various security forces to conduct day and nighttime patrols to protect civilians in the area.
This night patrol is to increase the level of security. Yeah, one of the alarm was that we experienced the death of one person shot just near Jemten. Number two, we have also seen that there are some gangs that mobilize themselves in the middle of the night. By daytime, they are sleeping in the residential areas, and by night, they come out to trap people who move in the night and rob them out of their phones and rob them out of their monies.
Lieutenant Colonel Michael Machar, the SSPDF Civil Military Relations Director in Yei River County, says the Joint Operations Team will patrol the town between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m.
The soldiers are patrolling so that the civilians are not subjected to any situation. But we need the entire civil population to be in their places. Right from 11 onward, everybody, every soldier, every officer remain in their places. Because in the night, patrolling are the one to take charge of the town.
Robert Sarafino, a resident of Yei's Jigomoni neighborhood, says he and many other residents live in fear due to the ongoing security threat.
We want good security while sleeping in our houses during night hours, and what we want from the government as top priority is security and protection of people, including their properties, because there are other people who are benefiting during times of insecurity.
Gabad area resident Beatrice Joan welcomes Kanyikwa's move to step up nighttime security in Yei Town, but wonders about the makeup of the security forces.
We are not sure whether these people who are patrolling, will they be the true people or will they also be among the killers? So we need people who are really ready to serve the community, because we are tired of people dying, killed by unknown gunmen. They should look into the issue and they should find out the real killers.
Justice and Victor, a local civil society activist in Yei River County, urges local officials to come up with a long-term plan to address insecurity in the area.
When we can move freely, that indicates that it's a sign of peace, and that indicates we have also our freedom of movement and of being out. But we would argue that this patrolling team should be well catered for, because if this patrolling team is a hungry team, then this patrolling team itself can become insecurity threat to the people that they are protecting.
County Commissioner Kanyikwa is calling on the local population to cooperate with security forces and to come forward with any information on security threats so that authorities can respond promptly to such threats.
The life of the citizen is number one. The safety of the citizen is paramount. Their property must be taken care of. Each individual community should be aware of what is surrounding them, and they are supposed to inform government of threat to their lives. So by assisting government, it enforces security, and it provides government with the ability to secure lives and property. And we also would ask the people to inform us if any soldier misbehaves and mishandles or mistreats him or her.
While on a recent visit to Ye River County, Central Equatoria State Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony said state officials are working to restore peace and stability in the area. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Ye, Central Equatoria State.
Still on night curfews, authorities in Sudan's Red Sea state have imposed a night curfew in some parts of Port Sudan after a renewed communal fighting which resulted into the deaths of 5 people and 13 others were wounded early this week. The governor of the Red Sea state says no one will be allowed to move from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m., adding that all social gatherings are banned in the area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
In announcing the curfew Monday night, Red Sea State Governor Abdallah Shangrai Ohach banned all gatherings at tea places and nightclubs in Demanur, Qadisiyah, and Umm Al Qura neighborhoods of eastern Port Sudan town. Governor Shangrai told reporters in Port Sudan Monday that he ordered security forces to be deployed in areas after communal fighting broke out between Hadandawa and Beni Amir tribes, which left at least 5 people dead and 13 others injured. The wounded are receiving treatment at hospitals in Port Sudan town. Shangrai called for calm as security forces look for missing people who the governor says may have been killed during the fighting.
The state security committee shall continue to monitor the security situation in the aftermath of the incident and take necessary procedures that ensure security and safety of all citizens.
Governor Shangrai extended his deepest condolences to the families of the victims and wished the wounded individuals a quick recovery. He called on all families of those killed to avoid retaliation, saying revenge killings would only lead to more loss of life.
The security committee is hereby calling on all citizens to avoid rumors and to maintain social cohesion and social peace across the state. We here assure citizens that we will not entertain any act of outlaw elements.
Port Sudan resident Osman Abdurrahman says the situation is calm today as security forces in Land Cruiser pickups continue to patrol the area and disperse any type of public gatherings day or night. He says the presence of security personnel around town has prevented many people from going to their offices or opening up their businesses.
The situation now is relatively calm after the declaration of the night curfew. Security forces are patrolling in the area, but this curfew has affected some of us who depend on daily casual work. Some are unable to go to work due to the far distance.
The Red Sea State government has yet to disclose whether or not they have arrested any individuals involved in the recent intercommunal violence. Over the past 2 years, dozens of people were killed and dozens of others wounded during a series of intercommunal clashes in Port Sudan between Hadandawa, Beni Amir, Nuba, and other tribes in the area. In September 2020, officials in the area say 30 people were killed and dozens of others were injured during intercommunal fighting between the Beni Amir and Nuba in Port Sudan town. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A business survey conducted by some economists at the World Bank and the South Sudan National Bureau of Statistics shows 35% of businesses in South Sudan's urban centers face shocks largely due to insecurity, lack of market access, and access to finance and unreliable supply of electricity. Isaiah Chol, a Ruwa'i chairperson for the Bureau of Statistics, released the results last week. He called on the government to create a conducive environment and infrastructure for business activities. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Bureau of Statistics chairperson Isaiah Chola Ruwa'i says the major objective of the survey was to measure the impact of the 2013 and 2016 conflict on the economy. He says data collected 1 year ago for the Integrated Business Establishment Survey found that 38% of businesses reported being negatively affected directly by conflict, while over a third reported being victims of a robbery in the last 12 months. He says the survey was aimed at helping policymakers and business owners address the key challenges of energy, communication, and taxation so that South Sudanese businesses can thrive.
There has been some improvement in terms of the road connectivity. The network connectivity was very poor, but it has been extended now to some of the areas which were not covered previously. But there's still some work has to be done, because as we speak, we cannot even communicate with some of the areas in Upper Nile, Unity, Jongole, and even in Eastern Equatoria. The network is very poor. And the issue of power, people are still using generators, even in Zimbabwe. Issue to do with taxation. Previously, most of the institutions were collecting taxation. But as we speak, they are now controlled. They are now centralized.
Although most business owners are optimistic the economy will improve, about two-thirds identified corruption as a major obstacle to business growth, according to the report. 29-year-old Joy Juma, who deals in second-hand men's casual wear in a Juba market, says she started her business a month ago. Juma says in order to operate her business legally, she had to pay a significant amount of money to more than five different entities, not to mention the cost of utilities. She is calling on the national government to intervene.
Let this government just stand with us, to support us, like some issues with those city councils. They see when you have a small business, let them just charge you according to the business you are doing. Because for them, they see just open some small shop like this immediately. They'll take even the money above than what you are getting for a day.
The governor of the Bank of South Sudan, Dierre Tong Ngoro, said at a Tuesday's press conference in Juba that the central bank is working to stabilize the local currency and the economy in general so that other sectors of the economy improve and banks can offer loans to business owners.
But if you have inflation of 100% or 700%, you know, those who want to invest will be very reluctant. So I feel what we are doing now and the reforms that we have undertaken and the staff monitor program that we have agreed with the IMF will all create that conducive environment that will allow the economic actors to invest.
Abraham Matoch, an economist and vice chancellor at the Dr. John Garang University in Jonglei State, says since there is a relative peace in the country, especially in urban centers, banking institutions should not use insecurity as an excuse to decline loans to business persons.
There's no country that is just stable without any crisis. During the crisis is the time you can also make money. So it is a matter of opportunity cost, and it is a matter of taking the risk. And how to manage the risk is simple. And those people will be doing business inside the town where there is security. And all the banks are almost inside all the towns. So that cannot really prevent them not to provide loans.
World Bank economists say it is particularly important that the current period of relative stability is used to build local programs to boost demand, to facilitate access to finance, and to begin to build infrastructure that will serve the population of the country in the years to come. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, some young South Sudanese men and women are asking for leadership opportunities. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you told someone you appreciate them? And what was it for?
I don't remember the very last time, but what I can remember now is telling my girlfriend that she was beautiful. She is beautiful, and I can't just let her go.
Just this morning, I did appreciate my daughter for the progress that she's made and for working so hard and for everything that she's doing, you know, trying to learn things, doing this. There are many things that she's really surprising me for. So, yeah, just this morning, I did that.
2-3 days ago. It was just to say thank you and show more encouragement. It was my daughter for coming first position in school, and I needed to appreciate her so that she can continue on that same track.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Participants at an ongoing grassroots peace forum in Juba are calling on the government and parties to the revitalized peace agreement to give young men and women space to participate in decision-making on issues that affect the country. The young men and women say the country's leaders have repeatedly excluded them from key leadership roles, something they say is not fair. But the Undersecretary in the Peace Building Ministry urges young men and women to stop blame games and focus on developing the nation. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Hundreds of young men and women from all 10 states and the three administrative areas are attending the three-day forum being hosted by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan under the theme, The Role of Youth in Nation Building. The forum focuses on how young people can contribute to the prevention of violence, particularly intercommunal conflict, good governance and peace building. Daniel Mwaka, a staffer with the local NGO, Youth Empowerment Organization, says South Sudan's leadership has on several occasions ignored young men and women in decision-making matters.
For us to feel that we are part of the processes, young people need to be partners in working together with the government. Young people need to be included in every process that happened, be it consultation, being it permanent constitution-making processes. All these levels, young people need to be included, and their opinions are so much need to be valued as well and respected, not only at the capital level, but it should be also at the state level, the grassroots level.
One is Stephen Elias, a member of the Africa Democracy and Resilient Network, says there are many young people in all of the country's political parties, but they are not consulted in decision-making.
Give the women the space to discuss more than the 35% they want, and give the youth that space to also campaign in the political depreciation of the parties, of the agenda in the country, because it's not a vote, it's appointment from the party. So the party should do us justice as a country, you understand, to give the women wing, the youth groups, the disabled people, to give all aspect of development that comes as a part of their political character.
Elias says if the young men and women in political parties are not given space to participate, then they will always remain as political carpets, covering up the doctrine of their elders. He urges the young people representing the political parties in the country to stand up for the values of South Sudan. 24-year-old Gadbaj Tasha Nyatha of Unity State says she is disappointed with South Sudanese leaders because they usually have negative thoughts about young people, believing they know nothing about their history.
When you try to bring up subject, they put you off, and sometimes we are even threatened if you try to say the truth. I want our government to see that we are not challenging them, but the future belongs to us. They made us. They made a step ahead. We want to take that step to another level. What I need my government to do is to create that platform and give me a room to talk, a room to make a change in the country, a room to make my country a desired place whereby my children won't have to go to another country for studies.
Nyatha says she appreciates that South Sudan's current leaders brought the country up to this state of independence, but she says it's time to give young people space so that they can put to good use the skills they have learned which can help improve the country. Pia Philip, the undersecretary in the National Ministry for Peace Building, says South Sudan cannot move forward if people continue pointing fingers at each other. He's advising young people to start taking actions that move the country forward.
Taking this country ahead is your responsibility in your own small ways. You have gone to different schools. Some of you have been around Africa, in Europe, in America. Some of our fathers did not go to those countries. They did not attend those international lectures on democracy, good governance, and what takes a country ahead. You have this experience. We should forget about blame game of where we are coming from. We should think about how we move forward. And it is you, the youth, to design the future of your country, how you need it to be.
Gwang Chong, the deputy representative of the Secretary General in South Sudan, says the peace implementation has been a very slow process and may require young people to get involved.
The slow pace has resulted in fielding the subnational conflicts among the communities and fueling the insecurity. That's why, you know, I would really encourage all the youth to work together with the partners, to work with the governments, to work with the parties to the peace agreement, so that we are able to expedite the pace of implementation of the revitalized peace agreements.
Undersecretary Phillips says young people should not expect foreigners to design South Sudan for them, but that they should build an attitude of ownership for their country so they can work together to develop it. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
From Juba, we move to some health-related issues. Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine was found to be effective in adolescents aged 12 to 17 and showed no new or major safety problems in all clinical trial, the developer said on Tuesday, potentially setting a stage for a second vaccine for school-aged children to be authorized in July. This report is produced by Reuters Friday Jonah.
Vaccine makers are racing to get approval for their COVID-19 shots in younger and younger people. And on Tuesday, Moderna announced it would be the second firm to seek clearance to use their vaccine in school-aged children in the U.S. A clinical trial showed Moderna's shot was effective in adolescents aged 12 to 17, with no new or major safety problems. The Moderna vaccine, already authorized for adults aged 18 and up, will now go to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which could grant emergency use authorization as soon as July. It took U.S. regulators about a month to review and approve the Pfizer-BioNTech shot for ages 12 to 15. Moderna's trial studied 3,732 adolescents aged 12 to 17. Two-thirds got the vaccine, and one-third got a placebo. 2 weeks after the second dose, researchers found no cases of COVID-19 in the vaccine group and 4 cases in the placebo group. Children rarely develop COVID-19 symptoms, but they remain at risk of falling seriously ill and can still transmit the virus. Moderna is currently testing its vaccine in children as young as 6 months of age.
Still on COVID, the European Union pledged to deliver at least 100 million COVID-19 vaccine doses to low- and middle-income countries by year's end and develop vaccine production capacity in poor nations as it wrapped up a 2-day summit in Brussels. From Paris, Lisa Bryan reports for VOA on talks that also addressed climate change.
After being criticized for a slow vaccination start, European leaders say they are steaming ahead on COVID-19 inoculations, securing 1.8 billion doses to cover the next 2 years, enough to export to needy countries outside the 27-member bloc. The bloc says it's also on track to surpass goals of exporting 100 million doses to developing countries. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
We are working on an initiative to invest 1 billion euro from Team Europe to develop vaccine manufacturing in Africa, the capacity itself in Africa. It's a specific initiative with our African partners, an initiative not only for the production, so to build up the manufacturing capacities, but also for skills development, for the management of the supply chain, or, for example, the necessary regulatory framework through the African Medicines Agency.
In Europe, where many countries are emerging from lockdowns and hospitalizations are dropping, von der Leyen said the EU was on track to inoculate 70% of its adults by July's end. Europe's Medicines Agency is now considering whether to approve Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines for 12 to 15-year-olds. Meanwhile, special COVID-19 digital travel passes aim to open up summer travel for EU citizens who are either vaccinated, immune from having contracted the virus, or tested negative to it. Together, says analyst Scott Marcus, a senior fellow at the Brussels-based Bruegel Economic Research Group, the developments are shaping a more favorable tourism outlook for Europe.
I think that things are looking more promising.
I still think that late summer looked better than early summer, but I think we're on track to have a summer at least as good as last summer and probably better.
On Monday, EU leaders announced a flight ban and other toughened sanctions against Belarus after the forced landing of a Ryanair plane in Minsk and the arrest of a dissident journalist.
Aussi bien sur la Biélorussie que la Russie.
But speaking from Brussels, French President Emmanuel Macron said progressive sanctions had their limits and the EU needed to profoundly redefine its relationship with both Belarus and Russia. Member states also discussed the thorny issue of national emissions targets to meet the bloc's overall goal of reducing greenhouse gases by 55% by 2030 and becoming climate neutral by 2050. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Wednesday. Let's know what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with some very traditional song. Listening to some very traditional song about land fertility. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.